Hello everyone on Zoom and in the Zendo. We have our biggest Zendo turnout this evening since March 2020. So there was 11 of us for Zazen. I will start by going around and greeting the people on Zoom, and then we'll go around the Zendo and each person will say their name and we'll repeat it. So I will greet Bob, Aaron, Susan, Shoketsu, Linda R, Mark, Jinryu, Marv, Karen, Gathel, Phil, Tyler, Betty, Paulette, Antonio, Franklin, Sabrina, Tracy, and Ruth Ann. And in the Zendo, Linda B, Drew, Joan, Dave, Carson, Coral, and Erica. All right, Adomio. let's see. And just for anyone in the Zendo or anyone curious about coming, we wear masks while we're here, and I take it off for the talk. But I am fortunate to have my hands on a bunch of rapid tests, so I have been testing myself on Sunday mornings before I come and Tuesdays before I come. So there is only a very tiny chance that I would be contagious and come up negative. So if I come up positive, then I'll show up by Zoom. Okay. In terms of announcements, we do have a one-day retreat coming up on Saturday, January 29th, and you can participate in person or online, full-time or part-time. So the schedule for that can be found on the website. If you go to the calendar, you can just click on it. It has event information. And if you want to, please, registration isn't necessary, but particularly if you're going to be in person, you want to be on the all clear list. And it's nice to just know, right? I know one person who's coming so far, and it's nice to know if there's, and if you want to also, if you're online and you just want to let me know, yes, I plan to be there the whole time or for part of the day or something to kind of clarify your intention, you're invited to do that. And then we will have a spring term student program. So that is where it's about 2 or 3 month period, and a group of people gets together for an opening retreat where we tell each other our life stories and we share our vows for the term, and you make your own set of vows. And then we check in a couple times throughout the term. The one day retreats in between are recommended but not required. And then there's a closing retreat, where we come back together and reflect on the term and how our vows went. So that the opening retreat is February 26th, that's a Saturday, and the closing is May 14th, that's also a Saturday. So that's the bare minimum, is just to be able to attend those two retreats. So if you're curious about that, look on the calendar and save those dates. Any questions or other things that I should announce? Okay, let's see. Tonight, we are continuing our study of Kjogen Carlson's book, You Are Still Here. And we're studying chapter 11, non-opposition. This chapter was pretty dense. I don't know how many of you read it. There was a lot of stuff in there and a lot of stuff, it's funny because Kyogen's talks were, he was a very, very good and captivating speaker, and you followed it, but if you look at them when they were written, they just like kind of meandered all over the place, and he would be able to kind of bring it all back together at the end. But these are transcripts of his talks, and I know Sally Jiko Tisdale, who did the editing, and I told her I know how much work that was. So there's a lot of there's just a lot there, right? There's not kind of like a central like. I mean, I guess non-opposition was the theme that wove through the different teachings. So I'm kind of just picking out a few choice bits to talk about. So non-opposition as a theme, weaving through a bunch of different teachings. Non-opposition in our life, in our spiritual practice, and in our zazen. So I'm gonna visit the first topic, talk about it a little bit, and then we'll do a short, like 10-minute breakout on it. Coming back and discuss and report back, and then there'll be a couple more topics. So I was just going to read a little bit of the very first part of the chapter, in case there are those of you who haven't had a chance to read this. And he's telling, this is repeating a koan. It's a teaching koan story. There is a koan involving the monk Tozan and a disciple in his monastery who was having a hard time complaining about the heat. "It's too hot in the monastery in the summer, I can't meditate. And the zendo is too cold in the winter, so I can't meditate." So Tozan says, "Why don't you go where there is no cold and no heat?" The monk thinks for a while and asks, "Where is that?" Tozan replies, "When cold, cold kills the monk. When hot, heat kills the monk." At that point, the monk had an understanding. This killing here means the self that arises into opposition to circumstance, saying, "I don't want this, I don't want this." If one surrenders to it, the heat kills the self in opposition. When we surrender to the condition as it is, self and other disappears. We drop beneath it to the place of no cold or heat. The place of no cold or heat is the place of no opposition to any condition. What this really means is that the self that is in opposition to the cold and heat can die. Our opposition to what is right in front of us can just drop away and die, or die. When we let go of this self, this opposition, then instead of "I am so cold, I am suffering," it is just cold. There's a profound shift there of just this. So, non-opposition. What kind of non-opposition are we talking about? Our minds are made for dualistic, discriminatory thinking. That's what they evolved to do. This is good for us, this isn't, this is danger, this is friendly, this is food. That's what our minds do. So when we're faced with a teaching like this, we inevitably think about it in a dualistic or discriminatory way. So when we hear this story and think of a dedicated, successful practitioner of Zen, we probably think that if they do this, if they do go to the place where there is no heat or cold, the cold kills the monk, the heat kills the monk, the practitioner, we think they stop having any preferences, even for comfort, health, happiness, etc. They become like a robot with no emotions or desires, having attained a state beyond that of you or me, ordinary people. In a sense, they don't even feel the biting cold or the sweltering heat. Or if they do, it causes no like or dislike to arise. Or even if they do have innate preferences, they refrain from taking any actions to affect outcomes. Even if their hands are becoming frostbitten, they will just sit there silently, unmoving, and not complain. They will accept everything as it comes, passively and without any sense of self-preservation, let alone any sense of desire or ambition. So if you explore and imagine what you think this non-opposition might be, I don't know if you come up with scenarios like that, but I certainly do. And I think we kind of want to be like that, in the sense that it would be nice not to feel any pain or discomfort or distress or aversion. At least we'd like those feelings not to bother us so much. And maybe we feel like we should be like that, should be able to rise above these challenges. But I think we also don't want to become like that. I mean, okay, you know, then we don't, you know, the heat kills the monk, cold kills the monk, but like, then can the monk enjoy anything? You know, if we've kind of tuned off or don't have these preferences. Maybe we just kind of nod when we hear these teachings and then just kind of disregard them, you know, figuring we're not capable, we're not that ambitious. Or maybe we just don't, like I said, we don't have any interest in becoming a passive automaton. So we are right to doubt what we think this means. This is Kyogen's teacher, Roshi Kennett, what she would often say. You encounter a teaching that seems kind of, you know, how does that work? And what about this? So you're right to doubt, like to trust your intuition that these teachings are supposed to relieve suffering, increase happiness, increase wisdom and compassion. So if we have a sense that like, that doesn't seem like this teaching really fits with that, then we explore it. Maybe it means something other than what we think. So what is positive non-opposition? What kind of non-opposition does lead to less suffering, more true happiness, more wisdom and compassion? So it's important to clarify, as long as we are human beings, as long as we are alive and conscious, we still have feelings. And from the Buddhist point of view, feelings are not complex emotions like anger and resentment and jealousy and stuff like that. Feelings are just like, dislike, and neutrality. There's these basic, don't like that, don't want to be here, yes, I like that, yes, I want more of it. It's just, you know, this is like an amoeba has feelings in this sense. So we have these very basic feelings. We will always have them. They just arise like that. So we're always going to have feelings. So this non-opposition doesn't mean that we don't have feelings. And non-opposition is also not about passivity. So non-opposition is something we do, or an attitude we take, or however we want to phrase it, before, during, and after action. It is like, it's something, It's something independent of and separate from action. Whether we take action or don't take action, this non-opposition is something else. So it's not about not feeling, and it's not about passivity. So I often like to say, like, these things like acceptance, non-opposition, or whatever, that's about what's this moment and what has led up to it. It is non-opposition to, all right, here we are. It says nothing about what you're going to do from here on out, or whether you're going to do anything from here on out. It's just about, all right, this is, you know, being with reality this moment. So in breakouts, I wanted to give people some time to discuss when, and what I'm going to do is drop a link in the chat to a Google document with the question. So hopefully at least some of the people in each breakout room will have access to the question. And then I have little slips of paper to hand out in the Zendo. So I have this written down. When you are facing a challenge of any kind, what is positive non-opposition? And describe the experience of moving from opposition to non-opposition. So I'm not sure, you know, exactly what kind of challenge you might imagine. You know, at the very least, you could imagine like this koan, right? You're in the Zendo. Somebody, you know, refuses to turn on the heat. Like, I guess Darmarine leaves the windows cracked per COVID safety. You know, say it's just freezing in the Zendo, or it's sweltering, right? And you're just, at the very least, that. But obviously, any kinds of challenges in our life that we feel tension or aversion around. So when you're facing that kind of challenge, what is it? What is opposition? What does it mean to oppose it and not oppose it? Assuming that it's not about not having feelings. It's not about just like, you know, giving up and saying, I'm not going to do anything about this situation, but just what is that internal attitude of opposition versus non-opposition? And moving, if you identify, oh, okay, here's this situation, and oh, I'm feeling opposition to this situation. And if you are able to move from opposition to non-opposition, what changes? What changes in your body? What changes in your mind? What changes in your heart? So I guess Jinmyu is my Zoom host. So how about three people per? Or if there's one room that needs to have four, that's okay.
Well, I've set them up. It'll be fine.
Because in order for enough people to talk, there shouldn't be five people in there. It should only be three or four.
Okay, but let me.
Sorry, I should have told you ahead of time.
Well, the problem is that I was doing all this, so I recreated them.
Okay.
But I have no idea what the question is because I was busy creating.
I'm going to put in the chat. Hopefully, there's a link to a Google document with the question. When you are facing a challenge of any kind, what is positive non-opposition? And can you describe the experience of moving from opposition to non-opposition and what changes? Body, heart, and mind. And then the Zendo, I guess we could do two groups.
So I'll open the rooms now.
Yeah, and do 10 minutes.
Okay.
Just do two.
Take, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe, you know. gonna mix yourselves up.
Domio, can you mute yourselves?
Yes. All right, welcome back. So, not a hardcore obligation for every group to report, but I'm inviting to spend a few minutes on that. So, your group did choose somebody to reflect a little bit what you talked about. When you are facing a challenge, what is positive non-opposition? And what does that experience of moving from opposition to non-opposition feel like? Dave, and I'm going to turn the microphone to face you, so speak up.
I don't know if this directly addresses that question. I'm just kind of give a summary of what we were talking about, but we spoke a lot about discernment and how non-opposition doesn't mean not ever doing anything, but sort of intuitively understanding this is something that I can just accept to move on from. Or this other thing might be something I need to do something about depending on the circumstances, but it's not something that one necessarily has to dwell on. And we're just wondering, maybe at some point you just have like an intuitive understanding of this is an appropriate thing to do now, but it's not something you have to think about beforehand necessarily. It's something that you might just trust yourself with. That's what we got.
Others in there.
I guess we can go. Some of our discussions centered around control. So just kind of giving up control when appropriate. So kind of similar to what Dave said. So examples might be like, you have to do the dishes, but you don't want to do them. And eventually you decide, well, I'm not going to try to control who's going to own doing the dishes. I'm just going to do them and just try to be, chill about it when I do it. With that, you might notice in your body, you might breathe, nice exhale, relax, decrease in tension. More harmony and all that. I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole, but I kind of do. So you're mentioning positive non-opposition. It kind of implies there should be a negative non-opposition. Is that the same as complacency?
So he was asking, positive non-opposition implies, well, what's negative non-opposition? Yeah, good question. I hadn't really thought about it.
I had an idea.
Yeah.
I think it's okay, I'll do it, but I'm not going to like it.
That's still opposition.
He said, that's still opposition, though, isn't it?
It's not opposition. Well, I mean, you agree to do something or you agree to accept it, but you know you're going to hate it and you don't let go of that hatred.
It's a partial,
yeah.
Maybe
so
partial non-opposition.
Quasi non-opposition.
Yeah, I would say negative non-opposition would be what I was talking about, that kind of shutting off of feeling or passivity, that kind of like... from what I've heard, people will describe sometimes in the midst of depression, you don't have any opposition either because it's all just one negative blur and you're just like, ugh. So that, I guess I mean, this is more of a, we're still feeling, we're still engaged, but there's a non-opposition that happens there. All right, Zoom groups, anybody? Franklin.
Yeah, one thing that came up in our discussions was this idea of resistance. And I really liked the way it was put. There's this idea of resistance like to something like, let's say, cold, for example. And then there's almost this layer of resistance that says, I'm resisting my resistance, right? like kind of like, I shouldn't have this feeling, or I shouldn't have this reaction. And so I think exploring that is really interesting. And I think the analogy with the Buddha talking about the second arrow, right? The pain, and then there's the suffering that we kind of add on to it. So that kind of stuck with me. And I guess from my own perspective, a lot of what I think about in this context is emotional acceptance and not running away from those experiences, and usually the painful ones, fear, shame, whatever, those kinds of things. And so a positive spin on that is acknowledging those emotions and actually I think turning into something like self-compassion. So I think that covers what, in some form or another, what we talked about.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oops.
Aaron.
Yes. We were wondering, okay, positive non-opposition. And then one of the group members brought up, what she likes to do is think of, what is that source of the opposition and trying to recognize where it comes from. And we talked a lot about what it feels like to kind of be mired in being oppositional to something, not wanting to do something. And for me, I use the example of my professional life. I just have come back from family leave. We just had a baby girl, and I've been off for 2.5 months, and I came back and I'm not my best self. I'm griping a lot. I'm talking smack about people a lot, and it's not good. And it's and so we kind of recognize, well, where is that coming from? And someone brought up that it's kind of like this, what was it, the idea of the three poisons. Is this coming out of this opposition and these feelings? Is it coming out of fear of something, a hatred of something, or being ignorant of something? And just knowing the source and knowing that, trying to find that spaciousness that's talked about a lot, but that the opposite of, positive non-opposition is, promotes anxiety and crummy feelings and we talked about, trying to have compassion and empathy for other people. And it's hard to do that when you're stuck in opposition that way. So Jin, you brought up is that, when you're dealing with others or a situation, you don't know the full story, and just knowing that you don't know is kind of humbling. So I don't know if our conversation really zeroed in on your big question, but that's where we kind of took it. So
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Anything that hasn't been ended up being brought up? I was thinking about how I like to say practice is about living deliberately. So it's about the choices that we make. So when oppositional feelings arise, you know, this question of what choice can I make in this situation? Much of the time we can't make it's not really an option to be free of whatever is unpleasant or challenging, right? Or we have a commitment and therefore that we have to just deal with it or face it. So what within that situation, what choice do we have? And that non-oppositional attitude, you know, that people are honing in on, where you just kind of, all right, here's the situation, this is what I'm going to do, and you stop, you know, mulling over it, or you just move into it. There's a change in our internal attitude. Non-opposition to things as they are. And I was thinking about this in terms of being grounded in reality instead of like torturing ourselves with wringing our hands about it shouldn't be like this. Or so there's kind of a, if you almost think about it in terms of like our Zazen attitude, where we try to stay upright and still, as opposed to like, you know, like leaning back from things or kind of anticipating trying to change things. But just in this moment, okay, here things are, which is, that is the reality, right? So if we want to respond freely and appropriately, that's where we have to start. So Pema Chodron said, like, start where you are. All right, here I am, whether I want it to be this way or not. I guess sometimes, and this ties in too with dukkha and whatever, there's, like, you know, said before, Kyogen would say, there's different ways to slice the Dharma tomato, right? And, you know, dukkha, the reliefs of dukkha is kind of similar to this non-opposition. But this non-opposition is a pretty potent framing, if you will. It's almost like just you slice the Dharma in half and there you go. Of course, ironically, then you get two halves and it's dualistic. But and there's also some kind of, I've noticed for myself, there's like this delusion that I'm holding on to, that if I refuse to accept, if I internally oppose something, somehow I am keeping it at bay in a real way. If like, I don't like the way that you're acting and you're pissing me off, like there's just something inside me that is going like, and if I, and it's all that almost that I think, like if I relaxed and just didn't oppose the fact that you were acting the way you're acting, like somehow it would be like giving you permission, or somehow the floodgates would open and then all the bad, there'd be even more bad stuff. So this kind of like this tension that we hold against things, even though it's a complete delusion that we're having any effect other than, you know, like tension and problems in our own mind and heart. So when we let go of that, then we become freer to act. But also, as somebody was saying, I think maybe Franklin was getting at, there's this non-opposition. The non-opposition has to include our own feelings and reactions and opposition. It's like we have to just keep on expanding the boundary of that non-opposition. Because I mean, definitely, I fall into that. Like, I don't want to have an opposition to that. I want to be accepting of that. I'm trying to accept that. I'm trying to not be upset by that, you know, like, and then, you know, I'm just creating opposition, I guess, with myself, right? As opposed to like, okay, I don't like that. I'm getting upset. I really wish this situation was over, but there can be a non-opposition to that whole piece. And one of the things, so there's so much in this chapter. I chose three sections. We're only going to get to two. But I really wanted to discuss the beautiful Manjushri image that that Kyogen brings up in this chapter. We have a Manjushri statue in our Zendo, and I'm going to, those of you who are on Zoom, I'm going to share my screen. So that's an image of our Manjushri statue. And then I have two pictures to we can hand around because the statue's a little far away. So Manjushri Bodhisattva is sitting on this beast. It's often described as a lion, whatever, who knows. But it's the beast, and my teachers would always say it's the beast of self. And let's see, Kyogen describes this on page 63. Manjushri is the mind of wisdom. He sits on a lion throne. The lion throne is the body, will, consciousness, memory, perception, and understanding. It is also the self, our karmic bundle, impulse, everything about being human. Manjushri simply sits in wakefulness on the lion. When Manjushri is awake, the lion behaves perfectly. All Manjushri has to do is be awake. Then the lion becomes the lion throne of courage, power, and strength. And together they function as wisdom and wisdom action, uniting body and mind. When we become still, something from down beneath moves. When we surrender to this deeper part, everything we think of as lacking, polluted, karmically conditioned, inadequate, or whatever, is in service to that deeper mind. Just like the lion, it is drawn in and supports us. When this happens, there is no difference between higher and lower self. What we call lower self is the functioning part, the interface to the world. So scroll down for the Zoom viewers to this other image that I found, which I just love this particular beast of self has these, you know, googly eyes, and just I love the beasts that end up looking like, you know, they're almost coiled and you know, ready to jump up. So notably, Manjushri hasn't subdued the beast. This isn't a picture of Manjushri, you know, with his foot on the beast's head, you know, holding up his sword of wisdom. He hasn't tricked the beast or trapped the beast. And really, he hasn't even tamed it. If you look at the beast, there's still lots of character and energy there. So I love this as a visual ideal or model for our practice, for our everyday life, and for our zazen. This sense that we're looking to form a relationship with our self and all the components of our self. Getting to know ourselves and making friends with ourselves, if you will, but also through trial and error. I mean, I guess just like, just like parenting. You know, sometimes what you try works, sometimes it doesn't. You realize, okay, I need to, you know, go over on this side instead of that side. So the lion is our rambunctious human manifestation. So if you think of this as our zazen, what this means is that you can't come in, get instructions for zazen, and then do it right. It's not just like, okay, you've got, okay, now am I doing it right? Because it's about ourselves. It's about our relationship to our whole mind and being. So this is something that evolves and develops over years. We find our own balance. We find our own way of relating to our, that beast of self. Okay, whoa, that beast of self just threw me off and ran off and, you know, wreaked havoc. Or sometimes maybe we're too controlling and tight or something. So how do we find that balance? How do we sit in peace, but without creating opposition? And it can be very, very crazy making. we don't often talk a lot about our meditative practice. And in some ways, that's a good thing, because it's very, very simple. And the more you talk about it, the more complicated it implies that it is. On the other hand, so there's pros and cons to different kinds of meditation, different styles of Buddhism. But just in case anybody isn't, I think everybody here is familiar, but you know, our form of meditation is Shikan Taza, or themeless sitting, which actually the next chapter in Kyogen's book, he gives pretty specific instructions for Zazen. And basically we are as much as possible just sitting. We're sitting upright and still and silent, and that's it. But that doesn't mean effort isn't involved. I really love the Tuesday recitation that we do with one of Kazan's one, which is like, Zazen requires effort, but it's not the usual effort. And like, Zen requires study, but it's not the usual kind of study. So I like to think of it as relaxation. So if you went to a massage therapist and they're like, okay, you're laying out on the table and they say, now, you know, relax. You know, it's not that easy. We have tension just built in. We don't even know where it is anymore. And we're holding, and some, you know, then some massage that would be like, ooh, you're really tense. You know, how do we even let that go? We don't, it's not something we can just willfully let go. So if you think about Zazen, it's, we're trying to return to this simplicity of just being, not trying to change anything, not trying to make anything happen. And there, you know, ideally, if we were a little kid, we'd just, you know, there we go. What's the big deal? But as adults, we're like, how do you even do that? I don't even know how to do that. I don't know how to just sit. What do you mean just sit? So we complicate it. Which means it does take an effort, but it's a strange kind of effort to do less and less and less. And, you know, I have podcast episodes where I have recommendations for how do you approach this when you're trying to make an effort, but you don't want to create that kind of opposition, which then just gets in the way. So one that always works for me is, trying to remind myself as I sit there and my mind is wandering or something, I become aware of it, to remember, I am not trying to do anything. I'm just here, just this. Just like, oh, and maybe I'm only like that for 10 seconds, 20 seconds or something, but it's like every time we just feel that letting go of just, yeah, just here. Then we are, we're practicing that attitude of non-opposition. It's like our Zazen is we're creating the simplest, most conducive setting, circumstance for practicing that non-opposition, which is still obviously very difficult. But in the, you know, in the midst, we're not socially engaging, we're not trying to get something done, we're not, you know, bringing in more stimuli or whatever. So this is the ideal situation for just practicing non-opposition. But then what the idea is, then we learn to extend that attitude toward, you know, in the rest of our life. So that just leaves us with 3 minutes. Any last question or two before we, I mean, there was so much in this chapter. I could imagine somebody just saying, now what about on this other page? Like, oh my God. He had stuff about lightness and darkness and absolute and relative and everything. So there's a lot there.
I've got a 3 minute question.
Yeah.
Do you have like an elevator pitch? If you know, somebody thinks that Buddhism's all about acceptance and non-opposition, but they see you at a march for climate change or something, and they come to you and say, hey, I thought you were not opposing anything. Do you have like a quick answer that you have preloaded or not? I feel like you could have had this question before. So
I definitely. That's okay. In two minutes. That's the tough part. I could go on at length about it, but I would say non-opposition is only half of our practice. The other half is the bodhisattva vow, is engagement. And one half without the other is ineffective. So we only have non-opposition and we don't engage, we're just useless. And it's just selfish, because I think basically we're just hiding out from anything uncomfortable. But if we neglect the cultivating that non-opposition and just run around trying to fix things, we're probably not going to be very effective and we'll be stressed out and everything. So, I mean, I'm extremely grateful as I go about my, you know, whatever activism you could say that I do. I mean, this practice is a godsend. I don't know how other activists manage without some kind of spiritual practice, without some spiritual grounding, in a sense, in that sense of, you know, learning how to be non-opposed, finding some peace within it. Well, all right, I guess that's it for this evening. I will wrap up with our verse. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you everyone for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.